Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva la Verve!
Well, congratulations. You made it. It is January 1st, 2017, and so I think a pat on the back is in order for all of you. So if you want, you can go ahead and do that, because it's January 1st and you, my friends, have survived another Christmas. Well done. Very well done. Way to go, Verve. Yep. January 1st. It's a glorious day, right? I mean, a week ago we remembered Jesus' birth, and today we remember our survival of the last 2 months. Some of you know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like there's this collective sigh of relief as people hit their lazy boys on January 1st, on the first day of the new year. I mean, how many of you are just flat out tired from the last couple of months? Anybody honest enough to raise your hand on that one? Nobody? Yeah, there's a few people. Yeah. I mean, it can be exhausting, right? The last couple months can be absolutely exhausting. All of the planning and the preparations and the parties and the gifts and the eating and the, oh my God, it just goes on and on and on. And what do we really have to show for it? What's really left on January 1st? There's some presents to return, right? The Easy Bake Meth Lab, right? Bringing it back. Memories of your dysfunctional family, right? 10 extra pounds on the hips and thighs. What's really left on January 1st? Now, in my house, Christmas came very early. I was woken by my youngest son in the middle of a REM cycle at 5:30 a.m., and the next hour or so was filled with the joy of exchanging presents and watching each other open them. And then I looked around and I assessed the damage. And it was as if Christmas threw up in my living room, right? Wrapping paper and boxes and ribbons and bows. And it was all thrown into this pile, just waiting for someone, me, to pick it all up and throw it in the trash. So I did. And then I looked at my little small pile of gifts, which when you become a father, your pile is this small and everybody else's is this big. And I looked at my little pile of gifts, and in my head, I said to myself, this thing that I say to myself every year in that moment, there is nothing as over as Christmas. And the next day, our tree came down, and we put all the decorations back in the boxes, and we stored them away for the next 11 months, because there's nothing as over as Christmas. Now, don't get me wrong, I love Christmas. I love the lead up to it. It's probably my favorite time of the year, but I also find myself becoming victim to what has been properly termed the post-Christmas blues. It's a real thing. Psychologists have determined this is a real thing. There's a letdown that happens after Christmas and as we head into the new year. And all of the fun and the anticipation and the expectation, it comes to a screeching halt, and we're left wondering what just happened. And again, it's because there's nothing as over as Christmas. And it's not just Christmas that may be having you wonder what just happened, right? It's possible that 2016 didn't shape up to be the kind of year you wanted it to be or you thought it would be. Those resolutions you determined 12 months ago died somewhere around Valentine's Day, right? And the last couple of months have sucked some life out of you, and you're left wondering what will 2017 hold for you and for your family. And I think it begs us to ask the question, where does this letdown come from? Why are we left on January 1st or wondering where Christmas went and if this year will be any different than last? Well, welcome to the first week of a start of a new series we're calling Becoming. And with the calendar flipped to 2017, we thought it'd be good to take the next 4 weeks and examine some ways we can become different, hopefully better versions of ourselves in the coming year. And with the new year before us and the letdown of Christmas behind us, we're going to look at the importance of becoming content. You see, one of the reasons, maybe the greatest reason for our letdowns and that post-Christmas blues we experience is that we're not content. Look at what Ecclesiastes chapter 1 says. It says, everything is wearisome beyond description. No matter how much we see, we're never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are not content. We're not content. Now, like everyone, I struggle with contentment. I was a little bummed that the 65-inch TV that I wanted wasn't under the tree this year. Just had my small pile of gifts. However, there's a person, other than Jesus, who I think understood how to live a life of contentment better than anyone else. And his name was Paul. Now, Paul was a guy who lived in the first century, and he wrote a vast majority of the New Testament in the Bible. Paul lived a very interesting life. He was what was called an apostle. He was the sent one to go and tell the message of Jesus' coming, his life, his death, and his resurrection to the world. And Paul, in doing so, went through a lot. In fact, Paul was tortured. He was jailed. He was shipwrecked. He was homeless. He was hungry. And it was all in the name of following Jesus. And yet, he was somehow able to write about the contentment he experienced in his life. And he did so in Philippians chapter 4. So if you have a Bible, I encourage you to open to Philippians chapter 4. If you don't have a Bible, not a problem. All the verses are going to be on the screen behind me. And also, just so you know, if you don't own an easy-to-read translation of the Bible, we give them out for free at the Velcro Bar. So just head up back there and grab one of those. You can take them totally free for you today. And let me just set this up. In Philippians chapter 4, Paul is writing from a jail cell. Okay? He has been imprisoned for his outspoken faith in Jesus, and he writes to a church that he started in a city called Philippi. And he's writing a letter to encourage, challenge, and thank them. Not the kind of letter you would expect from somebody writing from jail. And then he finishes his letter and he says this to them. How I praise the Lord that you're concerned about me again. They're obviously concerned. He's in prison. I know you've always been concerned for me, but you didn't have the chance to help me. Not that I was ever in need, for I've learned how to be content with whatever I have. I know how to live on almost nothing or with everything. I've learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it's with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little, for I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength. Now, I want you to stop for a second, and I want us to talk about this, because I just told you Paul's experience, his life as a Christian, as he writes this letter. It was brutal, all right? Paul writes about some of his experiences in 2 Corinthians chapter 11. Now, just listen to the list of things that he's been through. He says, 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 I was shipwrecked. 3 he was shipwrecked. That's crazy. 1 I spent a whole night and a day adrift at sea. I've traveled on many long journeys. I've faced danger from rivers and from robbers. I've faced danger from my own people, the Jews, as well as from the Gentiles. I have faced danger in the cities, in the deserts, and on the seas. And I have faced danger from the men who claim to be believers but are not. I've worked hard and long, enduring many sleepless nights. I've been hungry and thirsty and often gone without food. I've shivered in the cold without enough clothing to keep me warm. Like think of how many of you have been shipwrecked before? Anyone? 1 You've been shipwrecked? Really? Well, that's actually pretty abnormal. How many of you have been stoned before? Not that kind of stone. Like, not, no. Anybody? Okay, a lot of hands came up on that one. How many of you have ran from robbers recently? Or how many of you have gone without food for days and weeks recently? You didn't have enough clothes to keep you warm. This was just Paul's reality. This is his everyday, his ongoings throughout his life. And so I have to ask, how is it possible? How is it possible that in Philippians chapter 4, Paul can even be writing what he's writing? How could he talk about the fact that he's content in every situation? He's been shipwrecked 3 times. Like, I would never get on a boat again. Well, what makes Paul so content in his life is that he has identified some things that will kill your contentment, and he's also identified some things that will fill your contentment. And so we're going to look at three contentment fillers that may just be the recipe we need to become content in 2017. And here's contentment filler number one. Learn to find the pony. There's a story of a family who had twin boys. And these two boys were complete opposites other than their looks. If one felt he was too hot, the other one was too cold. If one said the TV was too loud, the other one wanted the TV to be turned up, right? Opposite in every way. In fact, one of them was the eternal optimist, and the other was a doom and gloom pessimist. And so just to see what would happen, his father, on the twins' birthday, decided to do something as a sort of experiment. And so in the pessimist's room, he loaded it up with all of these toys, every toy you can imagine. And in the optimist twins' room, he filled it with horse manure. And as he walked by the pessimist's room, he saw this downtrodden son crying bitterly in the middle of this pile of presents. And he asked him, "Why are you crying?" And the boy answered, "Because my friends are going to be jealous, and I have to read all these instructions, and I'm going to constantly need batteries, and they'll all just eventually get broken anyway." And then he walked down the hall a little further, and he passed by the optimist's room, and he found him dancing for joy in the middle of a pile of manure. And he asked him, "What are you so happy about?" And the boy said, "Dad, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere." Now look at what Paul says. "Not that I was ever in need, for I have learned to be content with whatever I have." He says that he's learned how to live in the ups and downs in life. He's learned to see the pony in the midst of the poop-filled room. So often we end up discontent because we choose to not find the pony in our situation. We can't see the redeeming factor in our circumstances. When our present circumstances aren't perfect, right? When the job is no longer, when the husband grows fat, when the house is falling apart, we allow our discontentment to get the best of us. A couple of weeks ago, I looked up at the microwave in our house, and I noticed that the clock was off. I thought, that's weird. And so I went over there, and I opened the door, and I was pushing buttons, and I was like, this thing doesn't work. And so, being the man that I am, I took the microwave down, and I decided I'm going to fix this. And so I opened it up, which took me a while, because I'd never opened up a microwave before. Which was very presumptive that I would somehow be able to fix it since I can't even open it up. But I opened it up, and I looked inside, and I immediately thought to myself, I am not smart enough to try and fix this. So I called a real man, and he came over, and he charged me $80 to tell me that my microwave was broken. Listen, my circumstances were this. It was the week before Christmas. My sister and her family were living in our home. There are 9 people in our home, and we don't have a microwave all of a sudden. And I wish I could tell you that I was like the optimistic kid in the room, right? Where I was like, looking, there's got to be a pony in here somewhere, but I didn't. I moaned and I groaned and I complained to my family and told them how hard my life was and how bad they should feel for me because I've got to figure this whole thing out. And then, you know what I did? I went to Lowe's and I bought a new microwave. And then I brought it home and I put it in, and now we have a new microwave. Now did you hear that? I went to the store and I bought a brand new microwave with the money that I had in my pocket for the house that I own. You see the issue that we often fall into. Right? I had a house that needed a microwave. That's a good thing. I had the money to just go out and buy it. It's our default to find everything that's wrong in a situation, isn't it? And yet, those who are becoming content are people who find good in every situation. They learned to find the pony. And I wonder if there's a situation you're living in right now where you're a discontent, and God might be shaking you and nudging you a little bit like, there's a pony in there somewhere. It's time for you to stop moaning and groaning and complaining and being discontent. Start looking for the good in this situation. But there's more. You see, even if we do learn how to find the pony in our situations, there's still another thing that can absolutely kill our contentment, and it is our need for more stuff. We are a culture of stuffers. We love our stuff. We love to stuff our stuff. And there is no time that our desire for stuff becomes more of a reality and consumes us than in the last 2 months that we lived. And you may have experienced over the last few days that the acquisition of more stuff is not a source of contentment. Contrary to what every expert marketing scheme or media outlet will tell you, prettier things will not fill our contentment. In fact, if you've experienced this, you know that they often leave us feeling more discontent. And so if we want to become more content in the coming year, then we need contentment filler number two, and that is to unstuff our stuff. We got to learn to unstuff our stuff. The truth is that our need for stuff is the root of many of our problems. Look at what 1 Timothy chapter 6 says. True godliness with contentment is itself great wealth. After all, we brought nothing with us when we came into the world, and we can't take anything with us when we leave it. So if we have enough food and clothing, let us be content. But people who long to be rich fall into temptation and are trapped by many foolish and harmful desires that plunge them into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. And some people, craving money, have wandered from the true faith and pierced themselves with many sorrows. Now, I'm not going to beat a dead horse with this right now, but like, you know that feeling of walking away with all the stuff that you gathered at Christmas and feeling the least bit content with what you just gained, right? And this is why our contentment is filled when we stop focusing on the acquisition of stuff and start giving it away. When we start to unstuff our stuff, start giving away what we have, generosity fills our contentment tank. Proverbs chapter 11 says it best. It says, give freely and become more wealthy. Be stingy and lose everything. The generous will prosper. Those who refresh others will themselves be refreshed. Did you hear that? When you and I decide to refresh others, when we decide to give, unstuff our stuff, and use what we have to give to other people and the needs that they have, it's then that we begin to experience refreshment. It's then that we are filled with contentment. When you give of your time, and when you give of your abilities, when you give of your resources to help others, your gauge in your contentment tank will rise. It happens. It's promised and it's proven if you've ever done it before. It's possible that on December 25th, when you gather around with your family and you exchange gifts, that you gave a gift to somebody that totally refreshed them, right? The smile came on their face and you could just tell, like, man, they loved it. I nailed it with that gift. And it could have been something meaningful. Maybe it was something they needed. But whatever it was, as they opened the gift and you saw that refreshment wash over them, what happened in you? You experienced this sense of refreshment in yourself, this contentment that filled you unlike anything else. You were refreshed because they were refreshed. And this is the gift of generosity at its best. And it begins by us learning to let go of all of the stuff that we have. Paul says that he learned to live on nothing or on anything. His stuff, to Paul, did not matter. It didn't matter. He knew how to unstuff his stuff. He was extremely generous with what he had. He knew how to be generous with everything he owned. His time and his abilities and his resources were used in the most generous of ways.
I mean, look at him. He's cooped up in a Roman prison facing death, and he takes the time to write words of encouragement to the church in Philippi. That's a generous guy. That's a content human being. We got to learn to unstuff our stuff. But there's one more thing that Paul teaches that if we want to be content in 2017, we're going to have to learn as well. And that's contentment number three, to expect the unexpected. Expect the unexpected. Almost 13 years ago, my wife and I were married on March 5th, 2004. And as we were leading up to the wedding, we were in the process of planning our future, as most newly or soon-to-be married couples would be. And we had set in place this entire, schedule of events that were going to happen over the course of the next 5 to 6 years. And so I would finish school. I was in seminary, getting my master's at the time. She would work as an editor for this luxury magazine she was working for a few more years. And we would do some traveling. She would do some writing. Then when I finished school, she would go to school, get her master's degree. We'd travel some more. We'd enjoy our 20s as a married couple. It was a brilliant future. It was beautiful. And then the unexpected hit us like a ton of bricks. Got home from our honeymoon. Great week. 2 weeks later, we found out we'd be having a baby. Very unexpected. Now, some people say, well, why didn't you try to prevent it? We did. That's how unexpected it was. And I got to tell you, immediately our contentment was put to the test. This isn't what we had planned. This was not in the cards for us. It was going to change everything for us. And honestly, we were sort of bummed. I know it's customary that when you're supposed to be super excited when you're expecting a baby, but we just were not prepared for that. It was so unexpected. And it put our contentment to the test. But listen, now I have this 12-year-old kid who's super cooler than me. And the other night, he and I sat and we watched our favorite college team play basketball. And we were cheering and we were talking. And I couldn't help but think, how glad I am for the unexpected in my life. And honestly, I've just learned to expect the unexpected. You know what? 2017 is going to bring some things that are unexpected in your life. And we ought to go into it just expecting that. Expecting it. I fully expect that something completely unexpected is going to happen in the coming year. It's what happens. It's life. And it's funny because almost all of the things that have been so unexpected in my life are the things that have also brought some of the greatest good in my life. When we expect the unexpected, there's a sense of contentment that comes with that. We're ready for something unexpected to come. And when it hits, we know something good's going to come out of this because we've learned to find the pony in this. We've learned that this is to be expected. Look at what Philippians chapter 4, verse 12 says. This is Paul speaking again, and he says this. I've learned the secret of living in every situation, whether it's with a full stomach or empty, with plenty or little. Paul lived his life like on a roller coaster. He never knew what was coming next. He continuously lived in the unexpected of life. And here he is now locked up in a Roman prison. And Paul tells us that he's learned to be content in every situation no matter what. When the unexpected comes, I'm expecting it. Like, it doesn't rattle my contentment. Good or bad, expected or unexpected, his contentment is not shaken. I mean, he experienced the unexpected time and time again. Nobody gets on a boat that they know is going to shipwreck. It doesn't happen. And yet, his contentment, it remains. It remains. You see, Paul learned the importance of these contentment fillers in his life. He learned the importance of finding the pony in every situation. He learned to be generous, to unstuff his stuff. He learned to expect the unexpected. And he learned it all because he trusted one thing more than anything else. And he finishes this passage by saying it. And he writes in Philippians chapter 4, verse 13, he says, "For I can do everything through Christ who gives me strength." Paul learned all of that because of this. So what if Christmas in the last 12 months has you in the dumps? So what? 2017 doesn't have to be a year filled with discontentment. It does not have to be another year where you get to the end and you sort of moan and groan about the last couple of months and you think about all the resolutions you made that died somewhere around Valentine's Day and you wonder to yourself, will 2018 or 2019 or 2020 be any better for me? This year does not have to be anything like last year. You can become something different. You can become a person who lives a content-filled life. And when Jesus is the foundation and the strength in your life, it can begin to happen. You can get through anything. You can learn to be content in any and every situation. You can learn to let go of the things that will never make you content, to be generous with what you have. You can handle the unexpected in life. You can do everything through Christ who gives you strength. Contentment is found in a life spent with Jesus. Apart from that, we will never learn to find the pony. We will never learn to be generous. We will never learn to expect the unexpected. We will learn to live a life of discontentment. But a life found on the foundation of Jesus, on the strength of Jesus, is one that is destined for contentment. And I don't know about you, but I would love to experience more contentment in the next 12 months than I did in the last 12. You know, I wonder if our discontentment, that inability to do some of these things, to fill our lives with contentment, is because we're choosing to live life under our own strength and not God's. I wonder if today the discontentment you've felt over the last week is because you're trying to do everything on your own. You're trying to make it all right. You're trying to fill your own life with contentment, and you know it's impossible. And I wonder if we were to stop searching on our own for contentment and start searching for Jesus, if we would find exactly what we're looking for. I wonder if it's in that place, the search for Jesus, the search for God's strength in our life, that we would finally become content. In a minute, we're going to give you a couple minutes to think about this. And let me encourage you to think about some of the things and the sources of discontent in your life right now. There might be something or some things where you feel like, man, I just cannot seem to be content about my life because of these things. And consider how 2017 could be a year that you truly become content in life. I want you to take some time to really think about that. And then ask yourself the question, am I searching for contentment on my own? Am I trying to fill it with all of this stuff? Am I trying to, you know, get people around me who will somehow make me more content? Or am I searching after the source of contentment? Am I pursuing God and His strength, contentment that can only be found in Him? Let me pray. God, I think it is easy to say that all of us in this room, to one degree or another, struggle with contentment. I mean, we would love to think that we can go into each day feeling this overwhelming sense of joy and contentment, but the reality is it just doesn't happen. And I think the foundation of that is that we are often trying to do it under our own strength. We're often trying to find it on our own. And so, God, I pray that you would help us this year, instead of trying to claw our way towards contentment, that you would help us to search after you, that we would go to the source of contentment, and that you would teach us how to find the pony in our situations, how to be more generous and unstuff our stuff, how to expect the unexpected. Thank you for the example of Paul. His life is unimaginable. We're just grateful for the words that he's given to us, the teaching. I pray that they would somehow be applied in our lives in the coming year. And thank you most of all for Jesus, who came, who lived the life we couldn't live, and who died a death we deserved and rose again 3 days later to give us the hope of a content-filled life now and forevermore. And it's in his name we pray. Amen.